Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Hassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Hey, welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 163. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you're getting your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. Check us out on YouTube on the WEEI channel. We've got the Play Tessie playlist there. Subscribe to WEEI. Hit the thumbs up on the videos. And find us on the socials, at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. I'm here with Sammy. I'm here with Pat. It's Gordo. It's weird. It feels like it's been quiet. Doesn't it feel like it's been quiet? But it hasn't been. I was going through, because what I usually do to make sure that we don't like forget to talk about something on these shows is I'll like scroll back through my own Twitter feed to like see what I've tweeted about since we last recorded. And I was finding a bunch of stuff that like I just like told, like the Red Sox signed Patrick Sandoval. There's a bunch of stuff to discuss, and like I guess we could sort of kick it off with that, because like that got a lot of people feeling things like in a, and I think for them in a bad way. People weren't happy about it. I've always been a Patrick Sandoval guy. People don't like it because he's not going to pitch till maybe the later part of the second half at earliest. I'm questioning, and this will be a good question to ask Pat. I'm questioning whether he's going to pitch this year. I guess we could start there, Pat. Patrick Sandoval, end of June, Tommy John. What do you think is like the range of outcomes there?
End of June. I would guess earliest mid to late August.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. It's like he's a good pitcher. He's put up multiple mid rotation or better seasons. He didn't have a very good 2024, but I'm sure part of that was because his elbow was hanging on by a thread, and then he blew it out trying to strike out Otani. You guys see that story?
Oh, yeah.
Sam, you see that one?
Why don't you tell it for the people listening?
So basically, like, he had Otani 0-1, and then he threw a second strike, and he could feel that something was wrong in his elbow, but he had Otani 0-2. So he really wanted to finish the at-bat, and then he couldn't throw a strike, and he wasn't throwing hard because his elbow was ripped off, and then walked him on a gazillion pitches throwing on a ripped up elbow through 88 mile an hour fastball. He's like dying on the mound, and the Angels just aren't checking on him for some reason. It's ridiculous. But yeah, that was his last batter. That was it.
Okay. I mean, does that not sound like the most Boston athlete ever? Isn't that what people hear? Like a guy who's willing to die out there on the mound. And his name is Patrick too. It's a very Irish name. That's the most Boston athlete thing I've ever heard. And for the Red Sox, I mean, you know, the Andrew Bailey and Craig Breslow constantly talking about swing and miss in the zone. Patrick Sandoval on changeups, he has the fifth highest in zone whiff percentage on his changeup. So that's at 36.4%. The only people ahead of him, Bailey Ober, Tarek Skubal, Luke Weaver, Cole Reagan. So he gets a lot of swing and miss on the changeup. He's probably not going to pitch very much at all in 2025. If he recovers and he's feeling good, you have a cheap fourth or fifth starter for 2026. There's no downside. I feel like people just want to be mad about nothing, and this is not it.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go with this next with you guys is like, is there a reason to be upset about a deal like this? Because I think the answer is an obvious no. And this is a type of deal that only a team that A, has reasonable money to spend, and B, has a medical staff that can attract guys like this can sign. If you have to allocate every dollar perfectly every year, like a team like you see, like the Cleveland Guardians are trading away good players because they have to allocate every dollar and make sure they don't mess up their assets. A team like the Red Sox has some money laying around. They can use it like this. And you also have to have a good enough medical staff to attract a guy to want to recover with your team. It's hard in the middle of your recovery to change people that you're working with in your recovery. But for a staff like the Red Sox, this is not the first time that they've attracted a guy to do it. So, yeah, your hope basically is that he's pitching in 2026, fully healthy, throwing like he did, we'll say, in 2022. and he's making, or his luxury tax, it would be about $9 million.
Yeah, I keep seeing people say, why did the Red Sox do this? What does this do? When do these moves work? Well, there's two you can point to. James Paxton, they got about just a touch under 100 innings for no money in 2023, and he was solid. I'm not talking about last year, 2024. We're just talking about the 2022 signing, which paid dividends in 2023. And, you know, he wasn't the greatest pitcher of all time, but you got him for nothing. And then the second example, 2025, your closer to start the season could very well be Liam Hendricks, who the Red Sox got because Liam Hendricks liked the medical staff and he wanted to rehab with the Red Sox. The Red Sox got him for dirt cheap. Your closer, that could be a huge piece to the team. So I just don't understand why people just want to be mad when there's nothing to be mad about. There's no shot that this is the only starting pitching move for the rest of the offseason. No shot.
3.33 ERA from Paxton in his first 16 starts in 23 before he got hurt and tried to pitch on it.
My biggest thing, too, is the same people who are pissed about us losing out on Shane Bieber are the ones pissed that we signed Patrick Sandoval.
That's a good one.
What did you think Shane Bieber was going to be? What did you think the game plan was there? Just because he doesn't have a Cy Young, people are like, oh, here we go, bargain bin. Shane Bieber was not coming back till June or July. It is literally the same exact thing. He's just pitching from the left side, a little bit younger and not as good. It's the same ideology. It's an upgrade from the John Means rumor. It's a downgrade from Shane Bieber. It's the same thing.
I like that. Relax. That's a good way to put it. That's a great way to put it. This is a better addition than John Means would have been. I would have preferred Bieber. Bieber obviously will pitch a lot more this coming season than Sandoval will, but the other thing is that it really is just an order of operations thing. Like if the Red Sox had Corbin Burns in hand and they'd signed Teoscar and this is in addition to Crochet, people would be like, all right, they've done what they needed to do and this is the cherry on top. People want the order to go big thing, then the next big thing, then a little bit smaller, then a little bit smaller. And they freak out when things come in out of order.
Yes. Yes, Gordo. That's such a good way to put it. The order of operations does not matter. Actually, it does matter a little bit in terms of negotiation, but big picture, like I said, this is not going to be the only starting pitcher the Red Sox add for 2025. This guy might not even pitch in 2025. And you know what? I'll take it even a step further. If he never pitches for the Red Sox, it's not even that big of a deal. It would suck. We'd like to see the Red Sox get something out of Patrick Sandoval, but this is such small beans. I don't have the energy to get upset about stuff like this. And yet here I am upset about stuff like this, yelling into the microphone, but I'm actually mad at the people who are mad.
This is the way it's going to be.
We need more stuff. Yeah. Stuff needs to happen.
And it sucks because we're dropping this episode on Monday of the quietest. This is like, people don't do, nothing happens. Shit does not go down during Christmas week ever. So, like, enjoy what you got. Your moves for the time being are Patrick Sandoval being signed and Cam Boozer being traded for. I didn't even look up how to pronounce this guy's name, so I'm going to try.
Good luck.
Yoiker Fajardo?
I think it's Fajardo, but you're
Fajardo.
I don't know. You might.
I never looked it up.
Actual move, Red Sox acquired Austin Adams, who's an interesting relief pitcher. He's crazy. You guys, I'm sure you've seen the highlight reels. I think the Mets DFA'd him. Oakland picked him up, and he had some big strikeout to get out of a jam in New York against the Mets in 2024. And he flipped out and was like mocking the crowd. He was yelling at the owner's box like, "You fucking DFA'd me, fuck you!" Like, yell. So another guy that's very Boston athlete. So him and Patrick Sandoval. What are we complaining about, people? This is what we love.
Yeah, minor league deal for Austin Adams there, and he's basically like the all sliders kind of pitcher. So he routinely is at the top of the league in hit by pitches, or at least hit by pitch rate. But yeah, an interesting dude. I guess he shows his emotions on the mound. I really don't know that much about him, but he had a sub 4 ERA for the Athletics last year. I'm sure the deal has some sort of opt out clause at the end of spring training if he doesn't make the team. But I mean, we want to see them adding guys like this. You know, if he pitches well in spring training, shows the staff good stuff in his side sessions. And, you know, you've obviously got guys like Greg Weissert, you know, Brendan Bernardino, guys that we saw last year, Josh Winkowski, that have options, and you want this guy on the team and maximize your depth, you can do it. It's what they did last year with Joely. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
So I got a question for you guys. This is super important. So with Chapman on the team, who's got command issues, throws hard, isn't well-liked, then you got Adams, who hits a lot of batters and is very outspoken. You got Liam Hendricks, who, you know, is very loud on the mound, and he can drill a guy here and there, and he'll let you hear it. Are the Red Sox going to have one of those, like, big fights this year?
Oh,
I feel like this team is, like... Like they and Duran's not afraid to throw that. I feel like there could be some scuffles, some skirmishes.
Sammy, we have a 6'5" jacked Cuban reliever now. and then on top, oh my God, and then you add in if Bregman's here. Oh, there's a lot of fire there. They're gonna have a brawl this year.
Oh, if Bregman was on the Red Sox, and you know, obviously, like you said, with all the pitchers going to New York with the Yankee fans who. Yeah, right now they're gonna maybe try to put aside their differences because they want their team to sign him. But if he signs with the Red Sox, it's just gonna make them hate him even more.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It's a good point. I don't think Bregman himself would ever fight. He doesn't seem.
He's a little small.
Yeah,
no, he's just maybe a chill guy.
He's a good player. His presence would make the tension rise, but he himself would not be throwing hands.
Do we want to talk the hitter stuff that came out this week and the Spear thing? Let's get into that, and we can talk a little bit of Bregman too, because it feels like there's been some steam picked up there, at least as it pertains to social. But Alex Spear basically said it kind of the way it was implied in his article is that Teoscar and Bregman are the two primary guys, but then the backup option was Randall Grichuk, which that was the first time we heard that name. Personally, not the biggest fan of Randall Grichuk. They've got a platoon guy in Refsnyder. I think Grichuk is an upgrade over that, but the only way to me that he makes sense on this team is if you needed a second platoon bat, and that would only work if you had both Willier and Yoshida on the team. And we saw last year how having multiple platoon bats in the same lineup every day goes. The way it goes is you get to the sixth inning, let's say right-handed starter on the mound comes out for a left-handed reliever in the sixth inning because teams attack the Red Sox with their lefties. The Red Sox now put in Rob Refsnyder. They would put in Randall Grichuk if he's on the team. They put in Romy Gonzalez to go after the lefty. And then by the time that part of the lineup comes around again in the ninth, you've got the right-handed closer. You've already sat down your left-handed bats in favor of the righties, and you're already facing a really tough pitcher in their closer, and you're facing guys who can't hit righties, or you're using guys who can't hit righties. So it killed the Sox in the late innings a lot last year to have that many platoon situations. If Grichuk happened, I'm nervous that it would be that again, and I don't want it.
Yeah, I think if the Red Sox were to sign Grichuk, their offense, it'd be fine, but I will absolutely lose my mind if that is the right-handed bat they add. I will flip out on the show if Randall Grichuk is the guy. That feels weird coming out of my mouth. Randall Grichuk is the guy. Try saying that and not feeling weird about it.
Say it, Pat.
Randall Grichuk is the guy.
Oh, he's the guy, man.
He almost puked. You could see it in his face. But no, really, I think they'd be fine if it's Randall Grichuk. I will not be happy if that's the case, though.
Yeah, the whole Grichuk thing, I think the idea of Grichuk, I don't necessarily hate, like a guy who truly, truly, truly just mashes lefties. My part more so comes from like roster fit. You literally have Randall Grichuk at home. His name is Rob Refsnyder.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys playing corner outfield spots, don't really hit righties all that well, both like above average defensively. There's a lot of pieces there that like, okay, on paper, I like this against lefties. But Gordo, like you said, it's way too many cooks in the kitchen. You pinch hit them, you start them, you flip them early. You just you guarantee yourself a pinch once a week. And it's just not a good way to go about it.
Yeah. And the thing with Grichuk is like, the one thing I will say is he kind of has the feel of a Hunter Renfroe, of an Adam Duvall, of a Cody Ross. And those guys have worked here in the past. So like, I understand that there's a reasonable chance that if that were to happen, we'd all enjoy the experience by the end. But in the end, it's once again punting it down the road, which I guess I shouldn't not be in favor of, because punting it down the road could imply that it's punting to Vlad, hopefully, who said today that the Blue Jays' offer of their extension pretty much was like embarrassing and not even close. But Grichuk scares me a little bit just because he was really good last year, 875 OPS, and even though he probably would be a platoon type guy, his OPS against righties was around 800, so pretty good. But the year before, 779, year before that, 724, year before that, 703, year before that, 793. So last year kind of feels like the outlier. He is going to be 34 in August. So, like, yes, adding him is better than not adding a right-handed bat at all.
Really? Really? Is it?
Yes.
Because yes. They have Ref Snyder. How much better is he than Ref Snyder? And then he's also going to be taking away at-bats from Christian Campbell, probably. I think Campbell's more of a left fielder than a second baseman. So I don't know.
Well, as it stands right now, you need two platoons, one for Willier and one for Yoshida. And one of them is Ref Snyder, and that's great. The other one right now is what? Like, Romy? So,
oh my God, I can't do... It's not even worth having
the conversation because it's not... It cannot be that. I want to say it will not be that. I don't know if I have enough faith to go that far. I have faith in these guys, but I don't know if I have enough faith to say that it will not be that. But oh my God, how much would you just rather they just get Teoscar Hernandez and he's the left fielder, or get Alex Bregman and he plays, in my opinion, so we should get into that. If they get Alex Bregman, I think he should play second base and Christian Campbell should be the left fielder. Like, you have flexibility because of Christian Campbell's versatility to kind of go about this however you want to go about it. If you want to sign the outfielders, we can throw Santander in that mix. Then Campbell's your second baseman when he's ready. If you want to sign Bregman, or it doesn't work quite as well with Arenado, but if you want to sign Bregman, he goes to second base. We could say Gleyber Torres too. Campbell goes to left. If they signed Bregman, I want to go to Sammy first on this. Would you be more in favor of Bregman? And I assume that you're not in favor of Devers to first. We've kind of gone over that. If they signed Bregman, are you more in favor of Bregman to third and Devers to DH with Campbell, your second baseman, and your outfield kind of aligned as it is? Or are you more in favor of Bregman to second, Campbell to left field? This presumably means that Roman Anthony will take over right field, Willier gets traded, and DH is right as a Yoshida Ref Snyder platoon, I think, as it stands right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts, but in a vacuum, I think a large chunk of Alex Bregman's value is his third base defense, and he would be replacing a net negative in Devers at third base defensively. So I think it's a no-brainer. I'd put Bregman at third base. I'd put Campbell at second. I don't think Campbell's a long-term fit at second base, but he was fine. I would even say he was slightly better than average in Double A and Triple A at playing second base. So
that's what he thinks he should play.
Say it again.
He thinks he says that if he were given the choice, he'd play second base. Although he's obviously open to anything. But
awesome. He's also 6'3", 220. So I don't know how long he'll last there. But it's just the concept of taking a not quite elite defender at third base, but a very good defensive third baseman and moving him to second. It's just kind of odd to me when your third baseman currently is a poor defender and you have a internal fit at second base. It just feels unnecessary. But I think Bregman would be fine at second base if they moved him there. It wouldn't be the end of the world. It's just not my preference.
Let me give my counter argument to this, and then Pat, you can kind of be the tiebreaker. Hold your thought, because I have no idea what Pat thinks on this. I thought Sammy was going to go in that direction. The reason I would go Bregman at second, if you look at the Red Sox defense by the numbers, by position last year, second base was worse than third base. They had the second worst second base defense by outs above average in the entire league. And pretty safe bet that Bregman, based off of his skill set, based off of his size, would be definitely above average, with potential to be even better than above average at second base. And the reason I like it is because if you put him at third and Devers is at DH, any upgrade that you want to make in season, if those are your only moves, it has to be either at second base or in left field. Whereas if you put Bregman at second, DH is this platoon of Yoshida, Ref Snyder, which A, has the potential to be good, but B, if you want an upgrade in the middle of the season, you can just throw them at DH. You can acquire any player. And then I think the biggest reason why I would put him at second base is I don't think you can trade Masayoshida. I would not DFA Masayoshida. I think he's too good of a hitter to just cast away. I think you can get pretty good production overall if him and Ref Snyder is your platoon. And this way now you've got, instead of needing both Roman Anthony and Sidon to both play well in the corner outfield spots if Sidon plays right field, now you only you're less reliant on young, unproven rookies and second-year guys if you just put Bregman at second, let the two veterans platoon at DH, and to open the season by having Campbell and Anthony compete for left field instead of counting on both of them. And then Sidon can play right field. Roman can take over when he's ready. But I think it fits a lot smoother. And then in a year or two, Bregman can play third and Devers can move to DH. I don't think you have to move Devers to DH this year, but if you have Bregman in the fold, it gives you the easiest way to move him there down the line when you actually do need to move him.
I am kind of in the middle. You Gordo, you kind of went down the road that I was going to say, but I think if Bregman slots in at second base, all he has to do, because I agree with Sammy, I think Campbell's a left fielder. I think that he just profiles that way. But if you have Bregman at second, right, that's he only has to play second until Marcelo is up. Once Marcelo is up, Bregman goes to third, Story goes to second, Marcelo to short. And that's kind of your long-term look there. Raffy slowly goes to that DH role. Off the rip, sure. Bregman at second base, I think he's I know he's an obvious upgrade there. He's a right-handed bat, upgrades what was horrendous second base defense last year. And then I think they don't move Raffy off of third base until they have to, which would be when Marcelo is up and ready.
Yeah, the beauty of it is when Marcelo is up and ready, some people think that Marcelo profiles more as a third baseman. He'd be elite defensively over there. You could try that if you want. If you don't want to do that, if you want him to be your second baseman, you can try that. And Bregman, we already know, is an elite defensive third baseman. So you have multiple avenues down the line, if you go that route, to having an elite defensive third baseman. And that's, I guess, more of an argument for Bregman over Teo rather than Bregman's initial positioning if they were to sign him.
One thing I don't love about the Bregman at second scenario that was just laid out is you have, like I said, Bregman's value is a lot of it is tied to his third base defense, but he's at second base. Sidon Rafaela, I would say the bulk of his value is tied to his center field defense. He's now in right field. Yoshida is a platoon DH. I can't stand that use of a bench spot for a guy who only hits righties, does not run well, does not defend at all. It just seems like way too many moving parts. And if you had Bregman, you stick him at third, Devers is your DH, and then you have Campbell or Grissom compete for second base. And if things move around in the outfield, Roman Anthony slots in, maybe you move Campbell back out there, and then you have Grissom at second base. And then along with that scenario, I don't love making a move or not making a move with an eye towards what you're going to do at the deadline. I feel like that's overthinking. And the deadline, you cross that bridge when you get there. It's that kind of thing. So I think it could work, Gordo, what you laid out. It's just playing Bregman at third base just seems so much simpler. And it's a better way to maximize the value of the guys on the roster. And that's just a very Red Sox way to operate.
I'll tell you why I think there's two key reasons why it's not as simple as you think it is. And one of them you kind of glossed over is the Yoshida thing. And I think you're implying that, because what do you do with Yoshida? If Devers is your DH,
why can't you DFA him?
He cannot DFA him. He's
why?
Too good.
Why? Give
to DFA.
Me one good reason. One because good. Nobody's too, ever given
because
me a reason.
Because he's too good.
What? No, he's not. He's going to be not too good.
If he's in the lineup, he can have an 800 OPS season.
We're talking about him as a platoon DH, and you're saying he's too good to DFA? He can't run. He can't play defense. He hits 12 home runs a year.
I'm not arguing against any of those things.
Why can't they DFA him? He's taking up a roster spot. He doesn't fit. I don't think he's a bad player. He's just not a fit. Get rid of him.
You can't DFA him because you're paying him a bunch of money and he can hit for an over 800 OPS.
What? We don't know that.
We do know that.
He's never done it.
He's done it for stretches when he's healthy. Obviously played last season, not healthy. I think if you start him in the season and he's hitting like crap, he's hitting 250 and he's got like a 715 OPS, then it's like, okay, like maybe in the middle of the season you can, but you can't DFA him this offseason. And I think one thing that's been proven based off of the deals that the Cardinals are turning down for Arenado, they turned down Stroman. They had a deal in place to only have to eat like $15 million to send him to Houston. Like, they're not taking Yoshida back in that deal. You're not gonna, yeah, you're not dumping. And yeah, and with the Bellinger salary, they only, the Cubs only had to eat $2.5 million there.
That you're not gonna be able to dump him. That was horrifying. Ian Kundal's tweet comparing.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, Yoshida is he's not been good. I just don't get why this guy gets the benefit of the doubt. I know he was good in Japan 3 years ago. He's 32. I just don't get it. I'm yet to hear anyone give me a good reason why he can't be DFA'd aside from he's getting paid a lot. Whatever, man. I'd rather it be dead money than wait. What is it? What's that quote? Sunken cost is dead. I don't know.
I guess partially it's about the money for me, but it's also about the potential. Like, he has the potential to be a better hitter than anyone you would put in that roster spot if you DFA'd him.
I don't see it, man. I mean, he's had a large amount of chances. How many at bats has he had now in Major League Baseball?
He's got to be well over 600.
I don't know if he's
listen. I'm not denying that it's been underwhelming.
No.
We've all agreed.
900. He's almost at 1,000 at bats. What are we doing,
Sammy? But the issue is even the production that he has put up, the production that you can count on him putting up again, is better than what you would get offensively if you DFA'd him and had a minimum type player, because that's what it would be. It's like you'd be signing a $15 million guy.
Offensively, maybe, but not defensively and not roster fit wise. It's just he does one thing.
I'll give you
that. He's not even that good at it. I just don't get why they can't DFA him if they can't move him. I'm not saying he's a bad player. He can hit a little bit. It's just the fit is so bad. Get rid of him.
I just think that there's too good of a chance that coming back healthy and putting him in spots where he can succeed, aka only against right-handed pitching.
Has he ever played like that? Has he ever been a platoon guy in Japan when he was succeeding?
No way. He couldn't platoon him. He was the best guy there.
So why do we think at age 32, as a not everyday player, he's going to be, one, okay with it, and two, succeed?
He's not going to be okay with it. I'll tell you that much. He wasn't okay with it last year. But the deal is, if he's even a little bit better, part of the biggest reason why you can't offload this guy right now is because he's got 3 years left at high money. No one's salary eats 3 years of high money.
No.
But if he plays a little bit better, 2 years of high money like that, yeah, that could be done. That could be done. And then you can, I'm not saying you're going to dump the entire salary, but like, if he plays reasonably this year, you're telling me you don't think that, like, there's teams that would sign DHs to a 2 year, $20 million contract. And now you've saved half the money.
But in the scenario that we all just agreed would be the case, he's not even playing that much. So he's not even going to be able to prove himself. It just seems like he could earn more time. It just makes no sense to me for the Red Sox to go out of their way to make this guy who doesn't fit, to make him fit for no reason, just because they don't want to have some dead money.
I don't think it's because of that. It's because he can help you. He can help. He can help.
If they
he
move some
be an
guys
above
around
average hitter next year.
If he were the everyday DH and he were a better fit, I would be totally fine with it. If he played every day against lefties and righties and there was a spot for him, great. I think he'd be good at that. But there's not. He just doesn't fit.
Sammy, we're talking about how bad this guy is. He was OPS plus 112, 12% better than league average as a hitter last year.
Is that worth it? A guy who's 12% better than average, he's going to play half the time as your DH, no defense, no speed, very little power. Is that worth an entire roster spot?
If you could save money, no, but you can't save money. And the truth is, with this Red Sox team, especially with the guys coming up, like, they've got a lot of guys who can play multiple positions, infield and outfield. They've got speed off the bench, assuming David Hamilton's back, and Romy Gonzalez for that matter. Like, they've got guys, like, you do have the ability to do this. Most teams do platoon one spot. I'm okay if it makes less sense to me if Willier's still here. A lot of it is tied to the fact that I think Willier has to go because, again, I'm not a proponent of having two platoon guys. But, yeah, I think he can help you. And I definitely don't think it's a guy that you'd be smart to punt on.
I think the other thing that's being lost, like, if you DFA Masa.
You could punt him, couldn't you?
If you DFA Masa, their two biggest weaknesses are even bigger. Masa doesn't really strike out all that much. He works counts and he walks. him and Tristan are the two guys that you're kind of like, okay, these guys work a count, they don't strike out a ton, so on and so forth. You take Masa out of the equation and you plug in a Teoscar. Sure, Teoscar has loads more pop. They might strike out the most in Major League Baseball, and that's not an exaggeration. Ugh,
you're making me mad that I didn't think of that point. Yoshida was the only guy on the Red Sox, I'll say it over and over again, the only guy on the Red Sox that struck out at an above average rate last year.
It's horrendous. And that being said, if you do get a Bregman, that I kind of change on that because Bregman's a high walk, low strikeout guy.
Imagine you have both.
But if it's Teo, that is very, very bad because there's also so many other holes you can plug to fill those giant holes.
Yoshida's only helping with that strikeout issue against right-handed pitching. And against right-handed pitching, the Red Sox, they crush them. They need help against lefties, and they need help without striking out. Yoshida only helps with one of those things, not striking out. And they don't really need that against righties. They kill righties. And by the way, Yoshida...
They still struck out against righties.
Sure, but they still did a ton of damage. And Yoshida against lefties last year, 565 OPS. So he did not hit lefties at all. So don't forget,
Sammy, don't forget down the stretch, though. Like, I know that if you look at the overall offensive numbers, especially if you only had it against righties, like, it looks good. Don't forget down the stretch for, like, the last month and a half, even against right-handed pitching. Like, the strikeouts just made for such an inconsistent team and a team that especially in the late innings, struggled. Having Yoshida does help with that. It does. I agree. He's very one-dimensional, not a valuable player, not even close to worth what he's making. But it's just the literal question at hand here is it better to have him on the roster or to cut him loose without saving any money?
I would cut him loose.
I just don't think you can do it.
As it stands now, there's a scenario where I could see him being on the roster. I just don't want – what I don't want is Yoshida on the bench. I either want him playing every day or on a different team. He is not valuable enough to be a part-time player. He doesn't do enough.
I think he should play every day. I just don't think he should start every day. He'll start against the righties and he'll pinch hit when a lefty starter's on the mound and they go to a righty reliever. He'll pinch hit. One platoon. That's all you're allowed. One.
If it's one platoon, it's a lot more palatable. But right now, it's
more it does that. Have a lot to do with Willier, which we can get to the pitching, I guess. There really isn't that much update wise, like free agent. / trade candidates for pitching. Like, even after the Sandoval thing, like, they are still in the market for and looking for pitching. And I think Jen McCaffrey even said frontline pitching. But the guys that Spear specifically named, he said they're still looking at Burns, which I have my doubts about. They're still looking at Bueller. They're still looking at Nick Pivetta. And they're still looking at trades, which I suppose the most likely trade candidates would be Luis Castillo and Jared Jones. Am I forgetting anyone? Jordan Montgomery, maybe, but we haven't heard anything there.
Pablo Lopez. Is it
Pablo Lopez? Yeah, Pablo Lopez. Yep, absolutely. If he's available, which hopefully we'll start to hear more about soon. Like, the Twins situation is weird. Pat, does your Who Says No have to do with the Twins for
no.
later in the week? Okay, so we can talk about it a little bit. They're going up for sale, we think, and... Like they've been really mysterious about whether they're offloading salary. Like, you got Carlos Correa making money, you got Pablo Lopez making money. Those are their two good high salary players. Is it more speculative or have there been actual reports that like they're considering this? Jeff Passan said something, but I forget what it was.
I think it's just speculative here. I mean, MLB Trade Rumors has them listening on Pablo Lopez, but that's such a vague word; it could mean anything. I feel like it's kind of the Who Says No I had last week. We kind of all just put the puzzle together. You have the Twins who they collapsed last year. It was very, very ugly what happened to the Twins. It wasn't publicized very much because it's the Twins, but they had a pretty ugly collapse. They're probably the fourth best team in the division. I would say Cleveland, Detroit, and Kansas City are all better than them and trending up. And then the lineup, I mean, this is like held together with popsicle sticks. Carlos Correa, Royce Lewis, Byron Buxton. That looks more like a hospital check-in sheet than a lineup. That's bad. So I just completely ignore the elephant in the room. The team is probably for sale or definitely for sale. Sounds like it's going to be sold. So those components, I wouldn't be surprised if they sell. I think it's foolish to think that this team is going to A, contend, B, if they do make the playoffs, if they have any chance of making a run. I don't think they do. So, yeah, wouldn't shock me to see them move veteran players like Lopez.
I have my doubts just because I feel like by this point, like, wouldn't we have heard more about it at the winter meetings if they were gonna trade Lopez and or Correa? That's where my pause is. Pablo Lopez, if he's available, he's 28 and eats innings even at his worst. Like he'd be a great ad. But I just have my doubts.
Did we hear much about Sale before he was traded? I feel like that one came out. I know it was years ago.
Oh yeah, we definitely did.
Yeah.
Oh wait, hold on. You're talking about when the Red Sox traded him or when they traded for him? Oh okay. Yeah. No, you're right. We didn't.
Yeah, I know it was a year ago, but like different.
Oh, traded. Sorry.
Sorry. I worded that poorly as if it was Chris Sale coming to the Reds. But even that, it was like very quick that Chris Sale coming to the Red Sox. It wasn't like weeks of smoke. So this is a long way of me saying things develop fast. It wouldn't shock me. Well, and we're always caught off guard by a few trades every offseason.
And then like the other thing too is like Josh Naylor kind of got traded out of nowhere the other day. It was like Dana Brown with the Astros. Like, yeah, maybe we'll listen on Kyle Tucker. And he was literally gone 5 days later. So like stuff does like come up and progress fast.
Yeah.
But a guy like Lopez, I feel like I agree, Sam. I think we would have heard a little bit more just because the starting pitching market is so hot. Where, you know, like guys like Naylor and Tucker, they kind of have like their own like niche markets, but everybody could use a Pablo Lopez. So
yeah,
we'll see.
And even with Crochet, it was like the offseason started. You had the teams that were linked to him, and then it was kind of just like little bits of murmurs, and then boom, Phillies, Red Sox, boom, trade happens. It just gets quiet for a little bit, and then it comes to a crescendo. Bang.
Yeah,
like
so
Alec
Boehm.
Alec Boehm would be the one with consistent smoke, or Luis Castillo, consistent smoke.
If Lopez were available, I would need to hear out the price, but based off of the – what does he have, 3 years left on the deal, or is it two? I think it's three. If I'm not mistaken, I know he's making real money, and it jumps this year too. He was making like 8.5, and now he's going to make over 20. So
let me get you plenty of contract.
Yeah, pull that up. But if he's available to me, he probably is my favorite candidate because he's basically everything that I like about Luis Castillo, except he's younger, and you can at least reasonably expect that he's not going to decline every year that you have him. So, which I'm not that concerned about with Castillo because declining from where he's at, he's still really good. But with Lopez, he's going to eat you innings. I really do think that's the most important thing the Red Sox should be targeting right now.
So Lopez, the Red Sox would have him 2025 through 2027. Those are his age 29, 30, and 31-year-old seasons. So that's pretty good. And the money is a little bit more than $3 million less than Luis Castillo. So you'd be getting a better pitcher who's younger and cheaper.
Which means you'd have to pay more in prospects. You would have to pay more for him.
Gladly.
But gladly. That's okay because you would definitely have to part with a legitimate blue chip piece, I think. I don't know if it would have to be a big three kind of thing just because of the money he's making.
But
that's a team who should be targeting big league talent anyway. Like something I keep thinking in my head is like Willier and Cutter and Lopez back. Like I'd have to figure out whether I think the Red Sox need to add to that or the Twins need to add to that, but like but again this is only really makes sense if the Twins are trying to cut costs, which we don't truly know yet. So but it's an interesting idea to think about. They're still in on these pitchers. I'm not quite as confident. Sam, I know you said at the top of the show I do lean that you think they're definitely going to add another pitcher. I do lean that I still think they're going to, but I don't think it's as sure of a bet as it once was.
I was very convicted when I said that. I think they'll add more pieces, I should say. Maybe it won't be a starting pitcher. People are acting like when Pablo... Ooh, oops.
No, nope, don't do that.
Patrick,
whoa.
Patrick Sandoval.
Don't knock do that. It off.
The wrong do Pete Sandoval. When Patrick/Pablo Sandoval got traded to the Red Sox, people were acting like that was it for the offseason. I should have been more specific. They're going to add more players. Maybe it's not a pitcher, but they're going to add more players. I still do think they'll add another pitcher, though.
There's been enough smoke with them looking for like, because I remember after they traded for Crochet, the words from Breslau were basically, yeah, we're going to look for more starting pitching and it's not going to be like depth guys. And I know Sandoval technically is like ability wise, not a depth guy, but when you're coming back like in mid to late August, yeah, you're a depth guy. So I do lean towards they probably will add another, but I don't think it's a sure bet. I think they're, in my opinion, you guys can tell me if you agree with this, their priority to me right now is getting a bat. I really think that's got to be priority numero uno in my book right now, is get a right-handed bat in this lineup, and there are options, but
yeah,
what do you think?
That has to be. That's currently the only glaring hole on the roster. Is that I think Crochet counts as an ace. I'd call him an ace. I know he's not proven, but
nah, he's an ace.
I think they got their pig. I think they helped the bullpen a little bit. I think that's second most important. That or like a backup catcher, beefing up the bullpen, beefing up the catcher situation. But the biggest priority right now has to be a right-handed bat. I feel like we've been talking about this for how many months? Red Sox being right-handed bat.
Probably going on like 14 months.
14 months.
Yeah, dude, it goes back to last year.
Let me tell you.
With O'Neill.
Danny Jansen is not walking through that door. They got to replace that Danny Jansen thump somehow.
That Fenway pull power, man.
Beer league softball swing.
Hell yeah, brother.
I would love him and Gavin Sheets, the right-handed and left-handed beer league softball swings. Same
Gavin
team.
Sheets is available. He could go to the Rays. They could be teammates.
Yes.
Look there at that. You go.
Huge.
But yeah, I like Narvaez though. I don't know.
Me too.
Like he can play defense, and that's like what we've been asking for the backup catcher. But he has options. Like you could beef it up if you wanted to. But I would not be totally heartbroken if they went into the season convicted on this guy is good enough to be our backup catcher.
I kind of want a crusty old backup catcher to be like, just make grunting noises at Connor Wong when he messes something up. Just be like,
and then Veritek's not good enough at that for you.
He is, but he's a coach. It's a little different. I'd love if Christian Vasquez weren't making $10 million. He would be the perfect backup. He knows the team, still a good defender. He's won before. He has weirdly clutch moments that are very fun. So, shame.
Before we get to any sort of enough said, what do you guys think of the broadcast stuff that came out today?
Oh, love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Kind of felt like all good news, right?
Yeah, more Lou.
More Lou.
You know what? After, you know, without Orsillo and Remy, it felt like, oh, who's going to be the announcer? We don't have anyone. And it's kind of like the same situation as the Red Sox on the field with their pitching. We felt like we didn't have anyone. And now all of a sudden, the Red Sox have all this great org depth. It's the same with the announcer. They got Lou. They got Will. They got Uke. They got, I guess, you know, there's other people who have come through the booth. But yeah, I mean, like there's been Mike Monaco, great. Joe Braverman in the back, great.
Well, as the executive producer for the Sox on EEI, I'm very happy that Fleming is back. I'm very happy I get to work with Will.
And the lead guy. Big shout out and big congrats to Will Fleming. I think we all assumed he was going to get it, but that just speaks to how good he is in that role. I'm glad a multi-year deal for him. I'm glad he's going to be here. He's going to be doing his thing, and he more than deserves it. It was really just all good things. Like Middlebrooks is going to get to do more because he's doing both TV and radio. The television viewers love Lou Maloney on the broadcast. He's going to be doing over half the games. I hope it's not the end of Uke because I really like Uke, but they McAdams said it's unclear. His contract expired, so we'll see about that. But I really do think that I'm glad that no one overthought it, and Fleming gets the job to do the play-by-play on the radio. I'm glad that Lou is doing more on the TV, and I just think that's great. And yes, would I like to have Mike Monaco as the full-time play-by-play guy? I would love that. But we know that O'Brien got a full-time contract extension. I thought he had a better year last year than he had in previous years, and maybe a competitive team can further energize him. Who knows? But maybe one day we'll get Mike Monaco as the full-time guy here. I'm sure he would love that. But I it's baby steps forward, and it's all good things, which we haven't necessarily been able to say in the past. But it was good that they had multiple options. Like it's not like less Uke is a good thing. I thought Uke was good in the broadcast booth. It's just that like you can't beat Lou. Lou's terrific.
Yeah, there's honestly nobody I don't like in that rotation. I think it's a good rotation. Will gets upset when the Red Sox are bad, and that is all I want in my local hometown announcer. I don't want a neutral guy for the home broadcast. I want a guy who you know, he presents as not quite a fan, but a guy who has a rooting interest in the Red Sox because he calls all the games. He knows all the players. Why wouldn't you root for that team unless they're a bunch of assholes? So I like Will Fleming. I love his style. I think Lou is great. Uke is great. Middlebrooks is great. They have a really good group of guys for the booth, radio and TV. And Bradfo for spring training.
Hell yeah. Come on. Woo. Yeah, just good things. Good things happening. I like it. It's like when you're moving forward into your window of contention, you want the broadcast booth to be kind of solidified. It feels like maybe we're going to get it to be the most solidified it's been since Jerry was here. But yeah, any enough said from you guys before we get out of here?
Yeah. Okay. Patriots fans. I know people aren't thrilled with Jerod Mayo, but what did you expect for this first season with him? You have a rookie head coach, a rookie defensive coordinator, a new offensive coordinator, a rookie quarterback, and an incredibly untalented roster. What did people think was going to happen? People flip out every game like, how did Jerod Mayo, blah, 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 XYZ. Da, da, da. What did people expect? This is exactly what I thought was going to happen. Maybe I thought they'd win one or two more games. Pretty much what I thought. I don't know.
Can I tell you, and I'm not an advocate that he should get fired because I think that has ramifications for years if you one and done coaches. But the reason I've been underwhelmed, it's not because of the record. It's more so because, A, they haven't gotten better week to week. Like, they were a better team. And maybe today they looked a lot better today. But for the most part this year, they were better in the first couple weeks than they have been down the stretch. And then there's been a lot of errors directly tied to the coaching staff. It's not like players making errors. It's bad clock management. Penalties, like these are things that you can directly point at the coaching staff for. So it's not like yes, the lack of talent on the roster has been a big problem for them, and it's why they're where they are. But it's not like
you're missing the obvious one, though, Gordo. You're missing the obvious that he has to walk back every single thing he says in a press conference.
That's true. No, that's the problem.
He's not on the mic. He says something. Post game, he says something, and then when he comes in on the morning on the Greg Hill show, you know, just play the truck sound effect, beep beep, because he keeps backing up whatever hot take he had.
That's a problem. I agree. He should talk less. Thing I
he was good after the game today. He didn't say anything bad after the game today. I don't think, unless I missed something.
I didn't hear. I don't know. I just think he's getting. I agree, Gordo. I think it's a really bad look on a franchise if you fire the head coach and then people are talking about replacing Van Pelt as the offensive coordinator. Wouldn't that be the fifth different offensive different offensive coordinators in 5 years, and people think that's a good idea. That's insanity.
Bad.
I would just run it. The only coaching change I think they should do is I think they should get a veteran presence in there to help Covington and Hightower, because those are very new defensive coaches, and they're dealing with a defense that is A, pretty young, and B, on the field 65% of the game. So I just think that Patriots, the issue is talent. Say what you want about the coaches. The issue is talent. They don't have it.
Yep. Pat, any enough said from you?
I do, and I don't like it.
Oh, my God. You guys hear that?
What was that?
That was Chester. Chester, you want to say hi? Yeah. Come here.
Gordo's reaction was so – I thought that was Chester, but you jumping was so funny. Hey, Chester. Welcome to the pod.
Say hi.
Chester, are you for keeping mayo for another year, or you want to fire?
He's like, I love mayonnaise. Oh, he's leaving.
All right. Later, Chester.
All right, Pat, what do you got?
This might be bold, but I don't think it is, but it might be. I am so, so done with Ramondre Stevenson. I loathe Ramondre Stevenson. Like, I have not despised a running back this much since Lawrence Maroney. All this guy does is run for 50 yards, drop a couple balls, and then fumble once a game. And we extended this man. We gave him money to do this. We gave him money to fumble. My brain cannot wrap my head around it.
Nah, he's been terrible. I agree 100%. And I like Stephen Ridley. That's the guy you probably – no one liked him besides
me. Oh, I hated Ridley.
No one liked him besides – I liked his onesies. He had, like, pajamas in the car ads. He was great.
He's probably – I mean, Ramondre's probably still your best running back, though. This just strengthens my point is there's no talent. How do you win without any talent?
No, it's bad.
Oh, dude. All I want, get the law firm himself, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis on the horn. Guy never coughed up the football. Get him in here, 3-yard runs every single touch.
Go away, no, Pat.
But we have Ramondre who drops a couple of screen passes, gets the ball punched out once a game. It's great. I love him. He's awesome. I'm so happy we paid him.
Yeah. Not the greatest extension. Before we get out of here is just rest in peace to Ricky Henderson. One of the all-time legends of the game, all-time stolen base leader, one of the all-time personalities. I posted this on Twitter. But like his career ends kind of right as my baseball memory begins. So maybe Sammy's a little bit more equipped to speak on this than I am. But just no one ever had a bad, like everyone loved Ricky Henderson. And you think of the legends of the game, he's in the upper echelon of that. Not just like he's one of those guys that's not just a Hall of Famer. He's a Hall of Famer. Like he's that. And gone way too soon, 65 years old. Did briefly play for the Red Sox. If I were going to remember any part of Ricky Henderson's career, that would have been it. But yeah, just rest in peace to a legend. I literally didn't even believe it was true when I saw the thing that came in. I was like, oh, it must be talking about a different Ricky Henderson. And then like an hour and a half later, I saw more and I was like, oh shit, I guess it's real. He actually died.
So here's his 1985 season, which statistically probably his best year ever. 9.9. B-War. Say what you want about war, but that was 143 games. So he missed 19 games. He scored 146 runs, which is by far the most in the league. 172 hits, 28 were doubles, 5 triples, 24 home runs. He drove in 72 as the leadoff guy, stole 80 bases, hit 314, and had a 934 OPS with a 157 OPS plus. Good for All-Star, Silver Slugger, third place in MVP voting. Dude was unbelievable. And actually, finally, something that makes me feel young, Ricky Henderson's year with the Red Sox, he only played one season with the Red Sox. That was the first year I can kind of fully remember in my head as a Red Sox fan, 2002. So I actually, growing up, when he left the Red Sox, I was so young, I kind of thought he was a Red Sox guy. And then I think my dad or someone explained to me, like, no, he's more known for the A's and Yankees and the Red Sox. And my brain had to compute that. But yeah, I'm just a very young guy, as you can see.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
But rest in peace to Ricky Henderson. Gone too soon. I wouldn't classify him as an old guy. So it's sad news. And one of the greats, probably the greatest base stealer of all time. So we're lucky we got to see the tail end of his career.
You want my Ricky Henderson stat? Mm-hmm. He stole 1,406 bases. You could have a player begin their major league career this year, play for 20 years, and steal 70 bases every single year for those 20 years, and he wouldn't beat Ricky's record.
Yeah, man. Not
okay, want a Ricky Henderson stat? Here's a crazy one. 1981, he stole 56 bases, which led the league. And then he stole 74 more bases than that the following year. 130 stolen bases. So he led the league, and then he more than doubled his total. The dude's a freak. So
he was just like, I could just do this whenever. Like, I don't need to not. Like, I could just go. Anytime I'm on first, I just go.
Yep.
But yeah, rest in peace to an absolute legend. Unless you guys have any final thoughts, we can wrap it up there. Schedule for the rest of the week. I think we're going to try to get a Who Says No out there for you guys on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to try to get back in the studio, record for an episode to drop Friday. Hopefully, I know it's a quiet week, but hopefully we get some semblance of news this week. We'll have a whole week to get it, so pray for us. But yeah, thank you for tuning in. Episode 163 of Play Tessie. Before you get out of here, go about your day. Celebrate the holidays with your family. hit the subscribe button. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. We really appreciate that. You can find us on YouTube on the WEI page. You can find a Play Tessie playlist there. It's got all of our episodes. So you can find that there. Hit the thumbs up on the videos. Subscribe. And find us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. For Sammy, for Pat, for Joe producing, happy holidays to you guys. Happy holidays to everyone listening. We'll get back in yours before the new year, so I'm not going to go year in review or anything like that, but just hope everyone, you know, enjoys the time with their family. Any time off you get, just enjoy it. And you're just one step closer to baseball season. So appreciate you guys tuning in for this one. Episode 163. That's a wrap. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.